and my number. So if you number my the way I get referrals or business, my number one is just word of mouth. I get new people every day from, you know, word of mouth. And that's just really the secret. The secret to business is don't poke people in the eye. Treat them well, you know.
Like that.
If you do service, do it the way you would like to have it done. You know, if you get out and the bike doesn't ride well, well, go back in and make it ride well. That way, you know, when someone hops on it and they ride it around, they go, wow, that's really good, you know. So number one is just word of mouth. You treat people well.
Welcome to Adult Encrypted, a show where we break down the complex code of common conundrums into logical living, an effort to decrypt the code we call adulting. We are your hosts.
I'm Gene,
and I enjoy the sport called Ultimate Frisbee.
I'm Roscoe, the dad, the bald one that's also the financial backer.
My name's Ashton, and I like to go skiing in the winter.
I'm Gideon, and I am currently a sophomore in high school, and I am your host. Today we actually have a very special guest, Mike. Welcome.
Woo! Welcome to Mike.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Mike, if you could do a little justice to, I don't know what to say. A little bio on yourself so our audience can get to know you.
Okay. So I we can go backwards a little bit. I own the bike barn. I grew up here in American Fork. Well, in American Fork. And, you know, I kind of grew up, I think, just as a normal person, doing normal stuff. I mountain biked. I did a lot of things growing up. Had a lot of activities I like to chase. I own the bike barn currently, and that's what I've done for 16 years. Before that, which can go into, but I did computer tech support for several years. I'm LDS, so I served a mission in England before that. I got married after the mission. That's been about 22 years now.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
That's 22 years is good. And then you see the guy at 50 and you're going, wow, you know, the longer you get it, living a life, the more impressive it gets that people stick things out and proceed and hold things together for a long period of time. So
it's kind of fun for me, because I go to the bike barn with Gideon quite often. You and I start talking a lot, but one thing that I find very impressive is you guys work together, and that doesn't always work for couples, but you guys spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, that's a question we get a lot at the bike bar. You know, when people come in and be like, you work together and you're okay with that? And yeah, you know, it's you know, with any relationship, you know, there's always ups and downs, and it's just working together is all it is. And so whether it's working at home or working at work, it's the same process. So for me, it's not a big deal to work together, because I mean,
that's what life is, right?
Yeah. You're working together. You're together. And so you should kind of want that.
So our audience might not know what bike barn is. I'm pretty sure most of them don't. So could you maybe give like kind of an explanation on
bike barn? Is the best bike shop in the whole of Utah.
Facts.
It is the facts, you know. We run a bicycle shop. I consider us a hole in the wall bicycle shop. Because we're not that big, and it's a little bit ragtag. But like I say, we've been running 16 years now, which is, you know, is pretty good when you're running a business. A lot of businesses don't make it that long. I've watched a lot of bike shops come and go. Usually, it takes about a year and a half, 2 years before they're gone. And we do, we just do things a little bit different at our shop. We, you know, I've learned a lot of secrets of business, and, you know, the secrets aren't really secrets, you know, once you get going. One is I'm friendly with all the other bike shops, and so I know all the guys, well, not all the guys, but most of the guys at the other bike shops, and it's the best form of advertising ever, because they know what I do that they don't do, and so they send me all their customers to help them with what they don't do. It's free. You just have to be nice to people and be friendly with them. And so, you know, and then we do what we do. I don't do everything, and that's okay. And so I'm more than happy to serve a customer, you know, which doesn't always mean, you know, doing business at my shop. You know, sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just getting them going in the right direction. So our shop's a little bit less business, but and more shop. And so
I like that. That's a good, yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a passion for me, and you know, and I love fixing things. You know, I also love riding bikes as well. Note to anyone else that likes to ride bikes and wants to do a bike shop: if you want to ride bikes, don't start a bike shop.
It was like me in the ski industry. All of a sudden I realized, wait, I'm doing all this working on stuff, not necessarily skiing on stuff, right?
That is the exact answer. You know, you spend all the time making sure everyone else is riding, and then when you're done, you're just tired.
That's awesome.
So
that's a good point.
But yeah, it's great fun. It's a great business. So
And you sell, I mean, just a little plug, I mean, you sell name brand bikes, so you say, oh, yeah, it's a little hole in the wall, but it's, you sell name brands, you sell high-end BMX bikes, you have that Fuji assisted pedal bike. When is that? No, it wasn't.
Fuji's
the electric one I jumped on. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then scooters, pro scooters too.
Yeah, I don't really know pro scooters.
We
do the BMX as well, and I know some guy over there that Gideon that knows about that, you know. And most shops don't even take care of the BMXers at all. They would rather not deal with BMXers. But I've, you know, had the team. We've always had the team. And Gideon, what are the rules of being on the team?
Isn't the first one just be a good person?
Yep. It's
being. He felt like he was on the test. He's like, well, you said to be good to people.
Yeah, that is the most important part, you know, of the BMX team, is to be a good person. Overall, you've got to be, you know, the best sales tactic for me, you know, is to have people who, you know, are, you know, a good representation of what I want to be, and that's just good people. So,
you know, when I think of a hole in the wall, I think of like the difference between going to a surf shop in a mall and a surf shop at the beach, you know, because you're getting the best quality service and the best quality gear, but it's not like a name brand store. It's just kind of like, it's someone who's incredibly passionate about their craft and their project, but it's hasn't been tainted by over commercialization, perhaps.
Yeah, there's kind of a system that people follow for the, you know, go to the mall, you know, and the system's there, loads of product, service maybe sometimes, you know, but if you want a good service, you've got to find someone with passion, and that's the key. You know, I could go on about feathers in my cap, you know, GT, they flew me out, you know, to special conventions for business. You know, this year we were in the top 10 sales for Fuji bikes, you know, and that's
fine. Bike Barn or like
Bike Barn? Yeah.
Wow.
So in the West Coast, we were in the top 10 of sales. So that, you know, working out of a really teeny shop, and the area representative, he'd never been to my shop, and when he actually walked in, he about fell over backwards because he's like, you guys do this out of the shop? And I'm like, yeah. And he just, he had never really worked in, you know, just a small time shop. He's only worked in big time shops. And so he just couldn't fathom how we could do what we did in the space we're in. And so, since we first met, we've become really good friends, and, you know, he looks at us a little bit differently than most people, so.
That's very cool.
But.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about Bike Barn, but I'm kind of curious on what you did beforehand.
Hello. If you're listening to this right now, that means you're currently listening to an episode of Adulting Decrypted. And let me just say thank you. My name's Ashton, one of the hosts of Adulting Decrypted, and I wanted to steal a quick second of your time to do a shameless little plug. If you've listened to our podcast for any sort of time, you know that we talk about a bunch of different stuff all about adulting. Because our goal is to help individuals in this task we call adulting. Now, we have just revamped the way that we do this. If you go to adultingdecrypted.com, you can see all of our episodes sorted out by category. We've sorted it into financial, practical, emotional, social, and things just for fun. So, if any of those categories are of particular interest to you right now, you can go onto the website, look through there, and see all of our episodes that correlate with that specific thing. This website's completely free to use. It's just another tool for our listeners to find things that are more important to them now. So, for example, if I was looking at it, I'd scroll through and say, hey, you know what? I want to see what the Adulting Decrypted crew has talked about socially. Well, one of our first episodes, season 1, episode 3, How Do I Talk to People? That's where we talked about all how to talk to people. So if that's something you want right now, you can go find that right now. Also in this one, season 3, episode 15, The Power of a Humble Mediator, where we talked to one of my old bosses about his business as a mayor, also as a small theater owner. Some really cool stuff. So, if you're looking for a better way to organize through all your self-help podcasts, try adultingdecrypted.com and enjoy the rest of the episode.
So, before Bike Barn, I did tech support. I did corporate support for Network Associates or McAfee VirusScan. You know, working with big clients like NBC and, you know, just big corporate accounts, which is actually fun when you're working with people and you can solve problems, you know. I've worked with NBC before. They had a locked up 30,000 computers, and we helped them fix it up. But the environments there. So I did there. The environments in the tech industry tends to follow a pattern, and sometimes you can dodge and duck this pattern. But most of the time you get stuck in it, and it's a good lesson of life is what happened here. You know, the company that I worked for was really great. They focused on customer service initially, and then as things went along, you see the new pictures come up on the wall with excellence and, you know, a mountain behind it, or achievement and all these things, and then they want to be more efficient, you know. I'll put that in air quotes. But what ends up happening is they played a number game with you, and then it becomes more about, you know, how many phone calls you can take and how quickly you can get them on and off the call and how fast you log into work and get to your chair and this and that, and it becomes a very robot version. And so I ended up leaving there and moved to another company, and again, this one, you know, same story. Everything, help the customer, do whatever it takes, make him happy, and then, you know, all of a sudden the pictures go up and they've got you roboting again, and you know, and at that point I'm like, it's, you're not helping anyone, you're actually causing more problems, you know. And at that point I left there because it was a unnecessary stress, you know, a lot of stress that was just, yeah, you were 15 seconds late logging in, you know, nonsense, you know. And so at that point I was young, and I had a lot of ambition, and I'd worked at a bike shop actually previous to doing that, more of like, you know, just off my mission, and I'd worked there for a year and a half, and I thought, you know what, I like working at a bike shop, and I think I'm gonna go start one. So with $0, I left there, freaked my wife out.
And, of course you did, yeah.
I went and I found a building. I negotiated a deal with a guy, so I had no payments for 6 months. I just had to fix the place up. And then I went with a lease option to purchase after that. So I went in there, fixed it up, opened it up. The first day open, had one bike for sale on the floor, and probably about 30 different products on the wall, you know, so nothing. it was nothing. And at that point, I just started figuring things out, because I had a plan. It was a loose plan but I had a lot of drive, you know, and I just made it happen.
Is that the building you're at currently, or are you at a different building?
So no, yeah, that was the building we're in right now. So I actually took up the whole building at that time. And so at that time, you know, had tons of space and very little product. And the longer you go, I got lots of product and very little space. But yeah, I got started in that, and that's when I began to learn the lessons of business, because I was not a business savvy person. I didn't know much. I just had good ideas, a little bit of experience, and started to figure things out. I can go into the story of this, which is it's kind of an interesting story on figuring things out, because no business degree, no nothing. We got started, and I made a lot of mistakes, you know, just one right after the next, you know, with debt and, you know, getting overworked. Finally, we got to the point after several years that I'd got things figured out and the ball was rolling, and we'd built up inventory and product, and we're making money, and I'd started, you know, getting good, reliable customers. And then we, my wife and I, we tried to have children for about 7 years. We'd been trying to have kids, and we were surprised that we were a girl. She was pregnant. She got pregnant into this process. So we're new into the business, and now finally getting pregnant, which is an interesting point in business, you know, because there's always curveballs that come at you, you know.
Right.
There's always lessons to learn. So we had a daughter, and 1 month after we had our daughter, we learned that she was going to die. She had a SMA, spinal muscular atrophy, and there's just no way to fix that. And that's when we, you know, at the time we were up at Primary Children's, and I really think I was blessed to have the pediatrician we had at the time and the gal up at Dr. Swoboda up at Primary Children's, because our doctor really didn't tell us anything, but he said, oh, I want you to go see this gal up at Primary Children just to run a few things, you know. And then we went up there and we got more suspicious once they always have student doctors and regular doctors come in and check. And after that, so we were sitting in this room, and doctor after doctor's coming in, and we're like, this isn't normal. Mm. And then when Dr. Swoboda came in, she ran through all the tests with our daughter, and then they all left, and they came back in, and they kind of broke it to us. In retrospect, was probably the best way possible. They said, look, this is really bad. And it was like a club in the face, you know. And oh, yeah, so,
sure. I mean, 7 years, right? And then
yeah,
and your daughter, and then faced with this. You said within the first month, right? Is that
yeah? So at the 1 month appointment, that's where he kind of said, "I want you to go up here, you know, send us up there." And he luckily, most doctors don't even know what SMA is, and so he luckily had one more case of it. Because it would be very, very stressful not knowing. Now, Dr. Swobodis just laid it out and said, okay, this is the process that you're going to go through. And then eventually it's going to end like this. And that was processed for the next 6 months. Which changed business, you know, because now I'm businessman during the day. And, you know, and then I've got to, you know, we're at the hospital, you know, every couple of weeks, you know, for the next 6 months. And then at that point we'd gone through, you know, they eventually quit eating and, you know, and then we've got all this machinery at our house to, you know, for food pumps and different things. And then you get to the point where they just pass away. And we were lucky at that moment to be at Primary Children's, you know, when that happened. And so, so that was a life-changing experience in you know, our lives. So we'd struggled, oh, wanting yeah. and no success. And then our success is met with, you know, the worst possible option, you know, right. which I don't think anyone should ever go through.
Couldn't imagine.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't wish upon anyone. But I love our little girl. She was always a sweetheart, and she did have a personality, even though, you know, she was... She, you know, really couldn't move much. They just lose, with SMA, they lose their muscle function. And so as they get older, they can move less and less and less. And that's why they quit swallowing and they can't eat. And,
gotcha.
You know, so that's, they end up on feeding tubes. And then eventually their body just can't, they can't support their body with their nervous system and they
right.
pass away. And so, yeah, so that was our first obstacle that was, you know, aside from trying to figure everything out and making, you know, making decisions. If I could go back and do it again, I'd never use debt for anything going into it.
So you had leveraged some stuff, and so you've got these debt payments that you have to hit and make at the same time that you're the grieving father, the supportive husband.
Yeah.
So you've got all that you're up against as well. That's a lot, right? I mean, talk about adulting.
That is, and that's, you know, when you talk about adulting, you know, I think, you know, to pitch the adulting ideas, you know, everybody goes into adulthood with their ideas of what it is to be an adult, you know, and you're all wrong. I'm just going to say that.
That's awesome.
Because you have your own imagination of what it is. But every time you get a curveball like this or something, your whole perspective or your ideas will shift. And, you know, and at that point you have to start taking and owning the responsibility is what you have to do. And it has to be yours and you have to take it. You know, so to continue my story that, which will, help the understanding of different perspectives, because of the difficulty, you know, having our first child, we just kind of figured we probably wouldn't have to worry about anything. And shortly after that, my wife got pregnant with our boy that we have now. And that scared us to death because, you know, we didn't want to go through what we'd just been through.
Yeah, that trauma and that whole experience.
It was so this led up to more hospital visits, and they actually tested the baby to, you know, as it was growing, to see, you know, beforehand if it was going to have SMA. A little funny side story is every test we went in for the first few tests, the doctor would always say, well, there's less than a 1% chance of this going wrong. And for the first few tests, it just went wrong.
Every
So we had to redo tests and do this. And I remember it was like three or four tests in, and they were doing an ultrasound, and they were thinking something was wrong. And the doctor looked over and said, "Well, there's less that." And he caught himself and he said, "You guys are the 1%. Never mind." but he turned out to be just fine. None of the problems they thought were going to happen happened. And now we've got like the best kid ever. So,
and he works there with you guys too. I've seen him at the shop.
Yeah, yeah. He'll come in and he'll help out and he'll do. He likes to help a little bit, but he's got his own mind and wants to do his own thing. So he's into engines and this and that. And I always giggle. He had pulled the carburetor off our boat the other day and was cleaning it in the shop. And people come in, yeah, and they just look at him like, is he supposed to be doing that? And, you know, it was back in the early days when we had it, when we were in the full place, I was running busy doing everything. And he was back in the back of the shop and had some hammer and nails and was just pounding nails into one of our rack. And the fire marshals had come to inspect and I was trying to get to him, but they had all like grouped together back in the back of the shop, you know, and finally when I got to him, I ran back to, "You guys okay?" question. They were all just watching him and he was talking about hammering nails to these guys and they were just captivated by him. And so we've always been a little bit loose, let him use tools and stuff like that. So growing up with a son in the shop has been a interesting thing, you know, because he's there, you're working, but he kind of can freelance and do his own thing. And so
it almost feels like it's more a couple generations ago, right? Where it was family owned business, everybody pitched in, you made it work.
Yeah.
Right? And to your point, you work at work, you work at home, you know, you put food on the table and then you play together. Right. And
yeah.
And that's really fun, Mike, that's been the process of it. So I want, just so that I can fill in a gap, you started your business, then you had your son, and you were in debt. And did you figure that out, or what? I mean, obviously, you're still in business, right? 6 years later.
So, yeah. Well, there was a few things that happened that were really bad timing. Like, so we had some debts, and the debts weren't the, I had started addressing them sooner, you know, sooner in the process. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to take out one and then we're going to go for another. And I'm just not going to get any more debt. And so I'd consolidate and work and do. And I was working my thing this through. But then when we had our daughter, our tax lady quit at the same time. And I'm not a tax guy. And in the whole process, we're so busy. We got way behind on taxes. So we had tax issues. We still had debt issues. And when we came out of all this, you know, then we had way big, you know, issues because of the hospitals and this and that and jumping through hoops. And now we had, you know, tax people calling us and we had, you know, loans. And at this point, you know, the option is what? You know, you could easily walk away and say, you know what, I'm just done.
Take it all and I'll go find another customer service job and just slowly whittle away at whatever.
Right? Yeah. But I ended up going, well, I wanted to make it happen. So I began negotiating with everyone, you know, and, you know, it was a long process of juggling payments. I worked with the tax people. I worked, you know, and I slowly just said, look, I'm going to handle this, but I've just got to be able to have time. And this is, you know, this is a very adulting process, is learning, you know, in the face of adversity rather than walking away, to be able to negotiate and work out. You know, sometimes you can make it work, sometimes you can't, but being able to have the capacity and say, you know what, I'm going to step up to the plate here. And I had a lot of plates to step up to. And slowly over time, I was able to, you know, figure everything out, get it worked out, and then eventually, you know, got a new tax lady, and she's fantastic. Secret to business, find a fantastic tax person that you just love. So we had that. There was a process, and the process was really, you know, just communicating, because the tax guys, if I called him, talked to him every week, you know, said, hey, this is what we're doing, this is where we're at, you know, he was good. He knew where I was at. I knew where he was at. All the loan people, you know, you call them, you talk to them, you say, hey, this is where I'm at this week, this is what I'm doing. And that process slowly, you know, slowly works its way out. You pick one, you fix it, you pick the next one, you fix it, and finally you're going. And once we got to that point, we got to the point where, yeah, we're, you know, I'd cleared up all the major debts except for the building, and, you know, and we got the ball rolling really good at that point. You know, things were moving really well. We were plenty busy. You know, when you clear out all that debt, that is a huge burden off you, and you're moving forward, and doing good. And that bring on the next curveball. We might as well cover this as well. So after we'd got, you know, this far into it, which is about 5 years ago, I ended up going to the doctor, and because I had some mucus on my chest, and I got an antibiotic, and the particular antibiotic, 2 days in, I got one of the greatest side effects ever. That's very sarcastic. It made me ultra suicidal.
Wow.
And so after about a week of this being, because being ultra suicidal, I was kind of tired of it. It's not a fun place to
pretty
be.
Pretty fast, yeah.
It's a hard thing. And so I went back to the doctor, and I was inexperienced in what I was dealing with in the mental health world at this point. And the doctor gave me some other mental health drugs, which made everything worse. So you take suicidal, like super suicidal, and then multiply like that by 10, and then add on 1,000 other things, anxiety attacks, and this pretty much incapacitated me. I lost 30 pounds in 2 months, eating 6 meals a day. Not the diet program you want to be on. And we went back to the doctor, and he said to me, he says, well, what do you want me to do now? And I'm like, okay, well, I have no answers here. And I was kind of left on my own, not knowing where to go or what to do. Thankfully, I'd build up over time a good skill set of fixing things. And so I like to research and fix, and I began fixing that, but I was still trying to run the business at the same time. And at this point, all I could do, because I was having massive anxiety attacks, and if you've ever had a massive anxiety attack, they're pretty debilitating. You can't do much, but I was having 9 a day, and I was only sleeping about half an hour a night. And so I'd come to work, sit in the car and answer questions for Krista, or do small jobs, you know, that I could walk in and do, and then just go try and cope with the emotions and everything that was going through me at that time. So I spent about the first 6 months was probably the most horrible period of time, and I slowly was able to figure things out, got with a functional doctor, and learned many, many things about the mental health, and was able to start fixing myself. It took about 3 years before I could go like 2 or 3, 4 days without major depression and anxiety hitting me. And then, you know, finally about 4 or 5 years, you know, we're getting there to where, yeah, most of it was gone and I was doing pretty good. And then, and so that was a massive curveball, yet we still were able to, during that period of time, to grow the business and do really good. We did shrink down at that time. And so, even though we shrunk down, we actually got busier. So that was kind of a weird thing that happened. And so we kept growing even though the adversity was there. And then, and that brings us to almost here till this last year. We dealt with COVID. That's a curveball in and of itself. And then
you
we,
personally and the business, right? I mean, so it was kind of a double whammy.
Yes. So we went, you know, what, over a year and a half without getting COVID, working with customers and doing, and, you know, we weren't masked almost any of the time, you know. during that period of time, and then finally we actually caught up for my brother when he came to visit. So it's really kind of an odd circumstance, but now we've got our next curveball, because the COVID's quite debilitating for us and her, for me particularly. I was on oxygen and down for about 3.5 weeks, and you know, thankfully we have fantastic customers, and they've all been like ultra patient and understanding, and you know.
Well, Mike, part of that I think is you do stuff that big other shops won't do, right? I mean, I go to your shop and I see Walmart bikes and, you know, old bikes, and you know, a lot of bike shops that say, yeah, we're not working on that, and you're like, no, bring it, we'll figure it out.
I will work on any bike. I've had a $10,000 bike right after a Walmart bike. You know, it doesn't matter to me. The funny thing about that.
You had about a $10,000 bike.
Yeah, it's an expensive bike. In my head, I was like, that better like be made out of gold. And
there's some that are worth more than that.
Yeah, I'm well aware.
Yeah, and the particular gentleman that rides that bike, he probably puts on 600 miles a week.
Oh, geez.
You know, he's got 3 or 4 bikes lined up just in case one has to be in the shop so he can get on his other bike.
He's an ultra rider, basically? Or?
He is an ultra rider, and I could actually have a very cool discussion about him in and of itself, because he'll do 3-day fasts and do 200-mile rides or 100-mile ride each day while he's fully fasted. Which sounds absolutely insane, but he rips it out and is in fantastic shape. So that's another story.
Yeah. So I was kind of curious. You said that you kept it busy and it kept getting busier. Like, how did you get people to keep coming? Was it word of mouth or like?
I don't advertise a lot. That's the thing, is I do a little bit, maybe spend about $500 a year on actual advertising. And my number, so if you number my, the way I get referrals or business, my number one is just word of mouth. I get new people every day from, you know, word of mouth. And that's just really the secret to business is don't poke people in the eye. Treat them well, you know.
Like that.
If you do service, do it the way you would like to have it done. You know, if you get out and the bike doesn't ride well, go back in and make it ride well. That way, you know, when someone hops on it and they ride it around, they go, "Wow, that's really good," you know. So number one is just word of mouth. You treat people well. And number two is my relationships with other bike shops. So, you know, I get referrals from the Trek store. I get referrals from Bike Peddler. And every week, plenty of them, you know, they just send them over me. Like the Walmart bikes, a lot of the shops won't work on them, you know, but people...
And sometimes they're priced because they're covering such a big overhead, right? And they're covering such a big staff that it's not profitable for them. Or they'll quote such a high price, you're like, yeah, I spent couple hundred on the bike, I don't want to spend $100 to fix it up.
Exactly.
Right? And you're able to say, hey, you don't need another $100. You don't need to go to that extreme, but this will make it functional, but it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Right. And that's because I remember we had that conversation on my wife's dropper post. Okay, Mike, what do you suggest? And you're like, well, it's still in a great shape and you might want to put, you know.
Yeah.
And it's super fun to watch that whole process and that change. So
yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Third option is just easy. It's Google. You know, I got probably I can't remember what it's at right now, 4.8 stars or something. And, you know, that's just people leaving a good review. And
how did you learn about Mike?
From a friend that was going to buy a bike from you that learned it from his dad. So it's...
That's the number one, word of mouth.
And part of it's because you've been there forever, right? So his dad probably knew from, you know, forever ago. Right, and then said, "Hey, let's go down and look at this guy that does BMX bikes." And right, so you're absolutely right. And Gideon's a loyal customer.
Well, I was gonna say, I was gonna say, from experience alone, I would assume most business comes from word of mouth, because I heard about it from Gideon, which is not that all crazy because he's my brother. But then I hear him talking about it with kids at the bike park, and so I'm not surprised that the biggest source of business is word of mouth.
It's kind of an interesting thing, and I'll give you a key to word of mouth. And this is any business, whether you're doing, you know, the podcast or anything else. One of the things that I don't do is I don't like to be a pushy salesman. I don't like to be the guy that's like, well, you got to buy this or else you're, you know. And the reason for that is, and everybody knows somebody that's in this boat. They go out and they buy a bike or they purchase something, you know, and they were kind of coaxed into purchasing it. And then they hang it in their garage and they never use it. You know, if you're that guy and you say, yeah, I bought a bike over there and I never ride it. Worst advertising ever. You know, if I pushed a guy into doing something like that, then that's what they end up with. If I take the time and find out what they need and I suit their needs and they learn to love biking and they're like, man, I go out and have fun. This is the greatest thing ever. You know, that is your best advertisement ever, because the person's like, oh, I love my bike. It's the best in the world. And that's the kind of advertising you want. So over pushing and overselling and pushing things that people don't need is not what I do, because I want people that will come back and say, hey, that was the greatest thing ever. I loved being there because, you know, what I got out of it was beneficial. It added to my life. It didn't, you know, it wasn't just something hanging in the garage like every other thing you've got hanging in the garage.
Right.
So
I've got a few of those.
Yeah. Was that toward me?
No, not okay. At bikes. It's okay. Stuff. You know, lots of stuff.
I was thinking in my head, I was like, yeah, I've got this thing that is one of those things, and I've got this thing. And it was definitely ads online. I was like, I don't think that counts as a pushy salesman. But for me, I was like, convince me I needed it. But I mean,
that's their point, is to push you into it.
Right.
So, yeah. Mike, you said you spent like $500 on advertising. I'm kind of curious on what that might go to.
So there'll be different things. Sometimes, you know, I do a few Google ads, or not Google ads, Facebook ads, and they work okay. And usually I'll do city things, you know, sometimes the police department will do like activities with, you know, safety rides and stuff like that. So I'll do that. I used to do parades. I haven't, just because of my health. I can't do them. We do those. I'd spend more money when we do those, because they like to charge more money for the parades. But they were a heck of a lot of fun. Did you do Lehi with us at all? Have you done any parades with us?
No, not
okay. Much. So you haven't got to have that. I always like to do in the parades. That's kind of like a hometown. I actually think it's a terrible form of advertising, but I actually enjoyed doing it. So that's kind of why we did it. I think I reposted one of Jansen, and I think that was at the end of the Lehi parade where he backflipped Smokey the Bear. That was fun. Jansen was our backflipper. Didn't matter what tricks guys could do off the ramp. You know, they can do
backflips are the coolest to everybody.
Backflips are the winner. Everyone's like, oh, backflip, you know, yet they'll do way more technical tricks, you know, and they're like, yeah, those aren't cool. But the backflip, you go upside down, the world changes.
we noticed that the other day. We went to a rodeo and
exactly what I was telling you. I was like, backflips aren't that cool.
Well, these motorcycle guys, and you could tell by the way the crowd reacted, because they threw a couple of cool tricks. I don't know what they'd be called. Maybe Superman, Captain Morgan, you know, these things.
Like a Cordova, where you're like grabbing the handlebars, and or like one where they drop the bike and his foot are out on the handlebars and then
and they pick it back up, which is crazy cool. And then they save the backflips for last, and the whole audience was like,
that's exactly how it works. So you could do the coolest thing to a guy that understands it, and he'll be like, wow, you know, and then you backflip and everyone else, they love it. So
it's such an interesting concept too, because as a musician I understand it, because like I listen to the music that I find technically very interesting because I understand what's happening in the music, but the masses just love a nice 4/4 beat and nice like groovy bass underneath, and it's easy.
That's why you and I see it so different. Ashton's like, this music doesn't do it for me. I'm like, what do you mean? The lyrics are great. And he's like, given the music isn't anything to write home about. It's kind of dumb.
Right, and I'll be listening to my music, and my dad's like, that's just making me tense. Like, you need to stop that.
Because it's not like normal.
But, so. Yeah, no, I get that. You should see my record collection sometime.
I love to.
I like to experiment and listen to music that, you know, you may have never heard before. So I've got records I haven't even listened to yet, but one day I'll listen to. I'll just collect them at DI's and, you know, thrift stores and whatnot, and so I've got more records than you could shake a stick at. But I do it because I like to, you know, I like to get a different perspective on different perspective on life and where people come from and so. I'm going to pull out some of my thoughts on music just because you brought
it
up.
No, this is great. Yeah, I love it.
Because I like music, but what I find is most people that listen to music, they don't listen to the music. They just listen to that, you know, they find that beat that they like, and they might catch a few words in the song, and then they get a perception of what it's about. And a good example, and I laugh at this, you know, because, okay, it went on an LDS mission, came back, you know, and there's, you know, Mormons, the standard, right? And the song that had came out at the time was Chumbawamba Tub Thumping, okay? people would be like, oh yeah, I love this song, you know, and I'm like, you do, you know? And, you know, and they're, you know, active members, what you're like, oh, what do you like about the song? You know, and I remember talking to a friend of mine, and he's like, well, it's about getting knocked down and getting back up. And, you know, and I says, well, actually, this is about getting drunk all night, you know, partying with your friends and, you know, passing out and getting back up. You know, it's
blackout drunk. Right.
It's a beer drinking song, you know. Yeah. And, you know, so... you know, sometimes when you listen to a song and then you actually listen to it and you begin to understand the words, all of a sudden your perspective can change. And you know, to draw that back into adulting and life, you know, sometimes people have their own perspective and their music that they listen to and that dictates how they see life going. But they're sometimes not listening to the actual lyrics. And so they don't really know the consequence for, you know, their behavior or where they are at in life and where it's going to put them down the line, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that the fun part, and, you know, this is kind of a discussion amongst us, that, you know, when we had Clint on, he talked about having the ET and it's perfectly defined and it's perfect and it's pretty, right? And then you launch and Mike's going... Look, I kind of had a general idea. I knew what I liked. I knew what I wanted to try, but I'm not that depth of a thinker. I need to start tinkering, start learning about it, and then 16 years later, he's got a very successful, you know, practice.
Business, yeah.
I was going to say, practice fixing bikes.
Yeah.
Sick bikes come to you, and they could go out healthy. But he's got this very successful business. But I think you hit it earlier on. One thing you said is that you were dedicated and you're passionate about making it work, right? Even in your darkest hours, you're like, this is it. I'd much rather do this than plan B, mm-hmm. which was going to be a customer service rep again or to go do an office job or, you know what I mean? And I found it funny that you're like, they're like 15 seconds late and all of a sudden you're not worth it or whatever. You know, I found that very interesting that it's probably some of that micromanaging that drove you out from it where, if you don't mind sharing Bike Barn hours, what are your hours at Bike Barn?
So, you know, and this is a lesson I've learned too, because I put in way more hours than I should ever put in life. And part of that is I'm going to call it, you know, things that I still need to learn. You know, and learn because we run a family shop, and I do what I do really, really well. But what I don't do really well, and you got to be open and honest about what you don't do well, you know, and understand what you don't do well. I'm a terrible manager, right? I am, you know, you put me in front of 10 employees, I'm gonna make a wreck of it. You know, eventually I'd figure it out.
Right.
But I've never really gone, you know, I've hired people in the past, and I really don't hire people anymore because I have my quality standard and I do that. So I have put in, you know, a lot of hours. Can I say a lot of hours?
Yeah.
You know, but you know, to where, you know, I in the spring times, when I was full health, I'd put in 100 hours a week.
Wow.
My nephew, I remember him complaining to me. He's like, "Oh, I had to work 50 hours this week," and I'd broke like 110 that week, and I was just like, "Okay, so what? You know, what's your point?" And
wait for the punchline.
Yeah. So you know, in the springtime, you know, there's definitely a trade off. When you run things kind of the way I did, you know, being so busy and do that, you know, working that many hours is very, very, very taxing. And there is a point where, you know, in order for me to, if I were to say, take the bike barn to the next level, I would have to get and grow myself to be a manager person, to be able to manage people and be that person. Which is a whole nother task that I'd have to chase down. So who knows?
So currently the bike barn hours are like, you're not open Monday, right?
Yeah. Right now I don't actually, I do Monday, or I take Monday, the pretty much a big weekend. So, you know, it's Saturday, Sunday, Monday I take off, and then I do 12 to 6.
And the only reason I ask that question is that still a wide time to be open, and the customer knows that, and you still get customers because they know what they're going to get is right. Does that make sense? But you couldn't have started there. You had to go through those hundreds of hours, right, to get to that point where you go, okay, now I'm changing it to a lifestyle business, right? And it's, I'm able to live my life the way I need to on my terms. But it was all this underlying work. I think a lot of us see the final result. And I think we forget all the groundwork that you just laid out for us and how that's part of becoming an adult. And yeah, I think back to that song, anyways.
It's true, you know. And if you could box up a couple of lessons, and if you could actually put it into the youth so that they'd actually grasp it, that, you know, there's two lessons that I think sum up how to get from point A to point B. Number one is to be able to start looking with perspective, you know, look through everyone else's eyes, look and see where they come from, because then you'll become a fuller individual quicker, you know. And it took me a while to really understand that process. And then the second one is, and people think they do this, but most people don't do this. And it comes down to change, okay? Mm-hmm. And change is a really, really, it is such a dynamic thing, you know? One of my other passions, I've done Kung Fu for over 26 years.
Did not know that.
My first Sifu was a fantastic man, you know, and trained me really well and had a really good system. And in his process, he actually changed from Sifu to Sifu. And so he ended up under a man named F. Ching. And if you want to have fun, you can go, I think it's still on, you can see it on YouTube or whatever, but you watch the movie Ip Man, because that was Ip Ching's dad. And he's renowned. He was recognized as the guy for Wing Chun in China, right? And so I trained under Ron. It was my first Sifu. And then he passed away, and then I kind of had a period where I went along and with other students, and we trained and whatnot. And there's a few of the students that went to Hong Kong and trained directly with Ip Ching. And eventually I started training with one of these other Sifus that came back from there. And we were working out one day, and doing a drill called Chisao. But in the process, he said to me, he says, "Wow, you're really, really good at correcting or, you know, recovering, you know." And at first I thought, wow, that, you know, great compliment. And then just a minute later, I thought, wait, that wasn't a compliment whatsoever. that what he meant was, I'm really, really good at making mistakes. You know, I'm not doing things correctly.
The first time, or, yeah.
Yes. And so I had ingrained a process for you know, that I was mostly successful with, but with people of higher skill levels, I wasn't, because I was just covering up my mistakes. And at that point, I realized I needed to go back and rethink everything I was doing and actually make the change. And, you know, when your muscle memory and your mind and everything's ingrained in there, it's very, very difficult to set that aside and say, okay, this is the new person I'm going to be. And I did that, and it took me a long time. It took me like months to kind of retrain my mind. But I'd thought about this concept over and over, and I realized that, you know, in life, you don't have a lot of time. You know, time will slip away really quickly. And so if it takes you 3-4 months to fix a problem, you know, every problem is going to take 3 or 4 months. And so, I slowly worked on being able and willing to change, to be able to say, okay, I've got to do something different now. And I may tomorrow, you know, have figured something out and now do something different to improve or get better. And I think if the two, you know, if you could take, you know, take the youth and, you know, and even the old people, because a lot of people don't understand this, just in the big boat of the world we live in, you know, and say, okay, let's see things through other people's eyes and learn from that. And then, you know, and then when we find places where we can change and refine ourselves, let's figure out how to do that tomorrow, you know, and get it done tomorrow and make it a lasting change tomorrow. At that point, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, you know, you can go from today to next week and make a phenomenal difference in your life and become a more valuable person to yourself.
Powerful.
Gone down the rabbit hole.
Needed. Yeah. I really had never thought of that perspective.
So
I really enjoyed this one. Thanks so much, Mike, for coming on today. I think we all enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was a good
time. Learned a lot. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Adult and Decrypted. We really enjoyed having this week's conversation, and we hope you did as well.
If you ever want to comment on a topic, you can send us a message to our website, adultingdecrypted.com, our email, adultingdecrypted@gmail.com, or through our Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn accounts at adultingdecrypted.
If you have any topics for the show that you would like us to talk about, or if you are a parent and want us to talk about something your kid should know, send us a message on any of the accounts mentioned. If you'd like to be a guest or have an idea for someone you think we should have on our show, feel free to send us an email detailing your thoughts to adultingdecrypted@gmail.com. Adulting is teamwork.
We have merch. If you want to show off your Adulting Decrypted pride, check out our website, adultingdecrypted.com, or our partner website with shop.spreadshirt.com/adulting-decrypted. Lastly, if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us on our Patreon at Adulting Decrypted. Along with the benefits that come with our Patreon, and trust us, there are some pretty good ones in there, you will not only be helping us continue in the effort to make great content, but you will be part of a community of individuals all trying their best to adult. We appreciate you listening, enjoying, and leaving your positive reviews. Now, the special song from Gene and Gideon.
Mike an adult.
Hey!
Talk to Mike for the very first time.
Like an adult. Learning how to overcome life's curveballs.
Life's curveballs.
That was hard to say.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Adult and Decrypted. We really enjoyed having this week's conversation, and we hope you did as well.
If you ever want to comment on the topics, you can send us a message to our website, adultingdecrypted.com, our email, adultingdecrypted@gmail.com, or through our Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn accounts at adultingdecrypted.
If you have any topics for the show that you would like us to talk about, or if you are a parent and want us to talk about something your kid should know, send us a message on any of the accounts mentioned. If you'd like to be a guest or have an idea for someone you think we should have on our show, feel free to send us an email detailing your thoughts to adultingdecrypted@gmail.com. Adulting is teamwork.
We have merch. If you want to show off your Adulting Decrypted pride, check out our website, adultingdecrypted.com, or our partner website with shop.spreadshirt.com/adulting-decrypted.
Lastly, if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us on our Patreon at Adulting Decrypted. Along with the benefits that come with our Patreon, and trust us, there are some pretty good ones in there, you will not only be helping us continue in the effort to make great content, but you will be part of a community of individuals all trying their best to adult.
We appreciate you listening, enjoying, and leaving your positive reviews. Now, the special song from Gene and Gideon.